Hello everyone, welcome to the PC Gamer podcast. My name's Tim Edwards, I'm the editor of PC Gamer, and joining us in the studio today to talk about PC games and PC games only will be Graham Smith.
Hello.
What's your job on PC Gamer?
I am deputy editor.
Okay, and do you like it?
I quite like it.
You're not really enthusiastic about it.
I am super enthusiastic about it. I just hate my enthusiasm behind aloofness.
And a beard.
Yeah.
And Craig Pearson?
Hello.
Craig, what do you do on the magazine?
I'm a news editor.
What does that mean?
It means I'm responsible for every other part of the magazine.
And Tom Francis.
Hello.
Hello, Tom. Are you happy?
Yeah, I'm very happy. I have a sparkling festive fruit punch.
Oh.
It's enough to make any man happy.
So the reason I wanted to do some slightly longer intros is our podcast may now be in Steam. And so we may be getting a bunch of extra people if we tag it under a certain kind of number of games. So it may be that a bunch of American people who don't really know what PC Gamer suddenly subjected to our ramblings. So, hello, welcome, and let's talk about Team Fortress 2. So, it's been about 2 months since we've done a last podcast.
And although, through our trickery to our readers, it will seem like we did one only last week. So it took us 2 months to upload it.
And since then, some weird shit has gone down in Team Fortress 2 land, including a huge update with new weapons, huge update with weapons you can buy, new hats, and crates that you pay for.
Yeah, that's the evil part of the update.
It's actually evil. Are we saying it's evil?
I'm saying it's evil.
Okay, cool.
You can pay for everything now, basically, like except some old community weapons and everything else you can buy with real money.
Can you pay to win?
Not really.
If you, like, I mean, if you have a specific loadout of a bunch of unlockable weapons, I think there are some sets that are just outright better than the default class. Like, to play the default soldier now would just be idiotic.
Okay, because the new rocket launcher, is it, what's it called? It's
No, the new one is called the Black Box. This is in the community weapons that they've added in this patch. They're giving a cut of the money you pay for these weapons to the people who made the models. They call them community weapons, but in fact the community just made like a model, then Valve made a weapon and
Okay.
Added the model to it. But yeah, they're giving them a cut, so that was nice.
Did they keep the names?
I think so, but I don't think they let it define the function.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So Valve defined the function of what the weapons do and so the mechanics of it. So
some people try and suggest what the thing's supposed to do, but Valve will just.
So the mackerel that spy checks.
Yeah.
Was that? Do we know if that was actually decided? That was the idea behind the mackerel, or was just?
Didn't they patch it out? I thought they saw a patch note saying it will no longer do the message if you hit a disguised spy.
What? What's the point of the mackerel?
Well,
it's just
point
to insult people.
It's a humiliation weapon, so it's the only unlock with no stats. It has no bonus damage, no different attributes in any way. All it does is it tells everyone on the server every time you hit anyone with it. So it says, fish it. And it says, fish kill!
it multiplies as you go along, doesn't it? So it's like times two, whatever.
I don't think that corresponds to like extra damage or anything, does it? It's just you got hit by fish a lot of
times,
and that sucks for you.
So, did anyone here buy the weapons?
I did not. I am boycotting them.
You're boycotting them?
Kind of. I'm not like on a total principle or anything. Like, I don't mind Valve having more of my money, but I just don't like it as a sort of design decision. Like, I don't want to feel like I paid real money for any of my items. I'd happily pay like £2 a month as a fee to subscribe to TF2 or something. But I just feel cheap if I spend money on something. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't buy the weapons. I bought the token that allows you to rename your weapon. So I renamed my spy knife Mother.
I might buy that.
And I bought some presents. You got a thing called the Secret Saxon,
right,
where you go on the server and you open the Secret Saxon and it gives someone randomly on the server that a gift from inside that box. Problem was, when I went on the server and did it, it gave it to Tom.
It was a flare gun, by the way.
So Craig paid money for you to get an item you already
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, they pay for a random person to get it.
I also paid money to open up a crate and got something I already had.
Right.
That was a really cool server, though, because people were challenging everyone to duels and stuff, because that's a new thing they've added where...
And you have to buy the duels as well.
Yeah, I'm not so crazy about that. I thought I'd find dueling pistols and then that would let me do it, but I think you just have to buy them.
How do the duels work? Like, what do you...
You challenge another player on the enemy team to a duel, and they get a message saying, hey, this person wants a duel, do you accept? If you accept, then all it does is just keep track of how many times you do kill each other. So assists count to it too. So if you injure someone and they die, then if you're in a duel with them, then you get a point for that. And then at the end of the round, the duel's over and whoever had the most points wins. And it just keeps track of how many wins and losses you have. And your badge levels up. And when it levels up, you get a free item, like a random thing.
Graham, did you buy them?
I didn't buy them. I don't have any ethical or moral or design objections to them. I'm just quite poor. and, you know, if I'm going to spend money on things, I don't want it to be for imaginary stuff within games.
Okay. It's not imaginary. I'm not imagining these things.
They do exist.
They do exist.
I also, I was going to say, part of the reason I'm not buying any is I kind of want to keep track of what the experience is like without buying anything.
Okay.
Because you know, if Valve end up ruining Team Fortress 2 for free players, that's something we should be talking about, and we won't know if we all buy stuff.
I bought everything. which was, like, one of the things about DLC that everyone... no one really talks about it, is that buying stuff's really fun.
Like, you spend... might secretly be a girl inside.
I have been loading up the game, browsing the store, and then realise that I haven't played the game for a bit.
Yeah.
And quitting without playing the game.
Yeah. You know that thing, in, like, sometimes Steam does a deal, and you're like, shit, Knights of the Republic is £2. I really need to own Knights of the Republic on Steam. Then you never really play it.
I'm surprised that they don't let you access the store from outside the game.
Yeah.
I think that would be a big draw. Like, because you're just browsing the store, you look at weapons, and then it just gets you thinking about the game, gets you more involved in it.
Theoretically, I bought them because we wanted to make sure we had loads of coverage on them on the site for when the item store launched. But the thing about it is that I knew I would get really, really stressed if I kept dying because someone else... had was killing me on a weapon that they'd paid for and I didn't have.
Well, we knew that this would happen about 24 hours before it went live. We got an email from Valve saying, hey, this is going to happen. Do you want to get a post ready on it and ask us any questions? Which we did, obviously. But for that 24 hours, just the entire office was just talking about this. Like, it was just an endless debate-a-thon.
angry at something we knew was about to happen.
And it's kind of funny that Tim and I were arguing, him saying it's terrible, it's going to ruin the game, and me saying it'll be fine, I'm going to love it. And then now that it's out, Tim's bought everything, and I'm kind of stalwartly avoiding it. I don't want to buy any stupid weapons.
I'll say one thing, though. When you own the weapons, it's really nice.
I'm sure it is.
I mean, I've crafted most of them.
Okay.
Because I spent a lot of time playing the game before that, so I had plenty of stuff to just smelt down. In fact, I helped Tom craft a lot. I had so much more stuff, I gave Tom a bunch of stuff to craft with it.
See, I don't know what how I'm going to feel when I get a crate, because I haven't got a crate yet. And that's going to...
You'll start sweating.
Yeah, exactly.
Why are crates evil?
Well, you have to pay to unlock them.
You find the crate for free, and then you have to pay to unlock it and find out what it has inside.
It has a big list of what could potentially be in
the
crate.
There's some good stuff in
there. One of the items is the meaning of life. Or just Valve. You can just have Valve. That's one of the prizes. You just own the whole company if you open that crate.
How much are the crates?
The crates are free.
How much are the keys for the crates?
I think you can buy them as well, though.
I think... the key's like 150 or something.
You can buy the crates.
That wouldn't make
sense.
And
then you can buy
them. I'm sure you can't buy the crates.
Yeah, that doesn't sound evil. I mean, that sounds like, I was a little
fun with the money is what it is.
I was a little kid. I used to collect football stickers, and you buy a pack for £2 or whatever, and you get six, and you don't know if they're going to be duplicates or not.
But it's like going to a playground and just giving a kid one of those, and then saying, the next one's going to cost you, which is, if anything, creepy.
Well, no, it's like giving them the packets. But then chopping off their hands and saying, pay £1.50 and you can have your hands back so you can open it.
This is getting beyond creepy, I think. Just criminal. So,
and that's why there's no one with any hands in schools around Valve.
So you're saying they chop kids' hands off?
No, I'm not saying that at all. So the other thing that Valve did, which
before we move on, what's our verdict on this whole decision? Because it seemed like there was a big... fear that it was going to completely ruin the game. Has it completely ruined the game?
I think it's made the game much nicer. I like running a server and having people asking for it. It seems to be, everyone seems to have a really nice way of asking for
trades. I think the trading is the thing that's made it
better.
And I guess there's this thing where people are slightly more invested because they've put some cash in. Like, so many people bought TF2 and it was like £2 or something. I've no problem with giving Valve money. You know, I love Valve. I've been playing TF2 for a long time. I think some of the mechanics in it are at the far end of what I, as a player, find acceptable in free-to-play games anyway.
If they had introduced trading without introducing the ability to buy items from Valve, do you think that would have created like a black market where people were selling items on eBay and stuff like that?
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you can have one without the other.
But I don't think it, you know, the black market is, you know, I don't know what, I've no idea of the numbers, but there's, I don't think the black market numbers will be anywhere near as big as the cash that Valve bring into
the and the reason other games try and stop that is not because, you know, it leads to gang activity or street crime. It's that they don't want people to be able to buy things in-game because it unbalances the game. Whereas Valve are starting from the viewpoint that they don't mind how people obtain.
I just think there's there are psychological tricks that they're exploiting that...
Well, TF2 is nothing but a big playground for them to try stuff out.
Yeah. So
this is why they've done this, obviously. Just want to see how many people will do
but
this.
But I'm amazed that they did it with TF2 first. I thought Alien Swarm would be the perfect... testing ground for that level of involvement. And maybe Alien Swarm just doesn't have the community to support it.
That's what I was thinking. It's just, you need a huge community to test stuff out straight away.
For me,
go to TF2?
I don't hate it, and it hasn't ruined the game, but it's made the game slightly worse for me, and it's made me feel like I'm no longer kind of the key target audience for TF2. I feel like there's a bunch of people out there enjoying all the new stuff, like you, Tim.
Hey!
And I'm no longer one of those people. Whereas it used to be every time an update launched, I was one of the people who'd played it all night that night, no matter how shitty the experience was, because everyone was being engineers or whatever. Yeah. And it felt like part of that community, and now I feel like a bit of an outsider.
I suppose they did this, the way they did it, with you can't play, you can't get achievements to get the weapons.
Yeah.
It makes a change. But I mean, this might not be the way they do it from now on.
Yeah, if they'd launched it where you could get all the interesting weapons but not the hats via achievements, I'd be perfectly happy.
You can kind of just craft them as well, though,
I mean. Yeah,
we talked about this a little while ago, is the crafting system is
it's better than it used to be, but it still takes 7 weapons you don't want to get one that you do. I find 7 weapons that I don't want in about a month, so
I think you do need to play it every night to get a good amount of weapons. Like I've been doing.
I think the randomness of that system just ruins the ability for me to enjoy that system. The other kind of Valve announcement is Dota 2.
Yep.
Hooray!
Are we saying Dota or Dota?
I'm going to say Dota.
I'm going to say Dota.
I have no opinion one way or the other.
Dota.
So, has anyone here actually played the original Dota?
No, not in its original form. I tried to play League of Legends, but this was before I had a tutorial or anything.
I haven't played any of them. I just read about them and shake my head.
Same here.
So, I played the first Dota a long time ago at university for a couple of nights and thought it was quite good. Then went off to play something else. Now it's weird. Like, apparently it's just like an entire industry to itself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh, really? And then, so last night, I thought, you know, screw it, I'm going to load up League of Legends. Played it. It's brilliant. Shit.
Is that just a good version of Dota, though? Compared to what's happening,
it's like a free-to-play one made by a company called Riot Games.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like, so Dota originated with this Warcraft mod, is it?
Yeah,
So what's the Warcraft? What's the most played one right now, and what are we riffing on here?
It's Dota All Stars, isn't it?
Yeah. So Dota All Stars is, I'm going to get this wrong now. It's going to be really embarrassing.
I think it was Dota was the original mod, and it was just a level essentially. And the guy who did that
really
went off and founded Riot Games, and he now does League of Legends. Dota All Stars was a kind of more polished, advanced version of Dota, and that was done by a guy called Ice Frog, who's now been hired by Valve.
And that's the one that Valve were making.
Yes. And also, there's Heroes of New Earth, and I don't know where they came from.
And Demigod,
but that's noticeably separate. You know,
it's a shame they came way before pretty much everyone else.
Yeah, Demigod is pretty closely based in what I understand.
I think it is, but it's much more, it's a simplified version of it, whereas Heroes of New Earth and Dota and League of Legends are all based on teams of 5 going up against each other, whereas Demigod has some of that, but you can also,
One of the tough things about all of these games is the community is really difficult to get into, and you kind of need a guide, like not to read something, but you need a friend to play it and introduce you and kind of introduce you into it and to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a game where if you're in a team of 5, having a bad player on your team is actually worse than just being a man down.
Yeah.
Because if you've got a player on your team who's really bad and he's getting killed a lot, then he's actually benefiting the opposing team because they're getting gold for killing your guy. And so you may as well just kick him.
And experience.
Yeah. So that's what happens. If you're a noob and you join a server, then they just scream at you and then kick you after, you know, 3 minutes. And we found this when we did reviews of League of Legends and Heroes of New Earth. They're both just hideous communities. Absolutely massive, but inaccessible.
That makes me sad.
And so the focus of Dota 2, as Valve are making it, is rather than actually change the game and make it kind of you know, more accessible, easy to understand for new players by, you know, altering the mechanics, I think they are almost scared of altering it in any way because it's so successful and it's so weirdly successful. Like, it just sort of completely fucking took off.
Yeah.
And a bunch of people have, you know, made their own versions of it and have had varying degrees of success. And Valve just want to leave the actual game itself completely alone. And so everything they're doing, Uyun said, like, the map, there's only one map, and it's functionally identical to the free one that's out there right now. Everything they're doing is to persuade the community to be nicer to each other. And so you get in-game rewards for, like, mentoring someone. So you can offer to be a guide to a new player. And if you know how to play, you're like a spectator on his screen, and you can just see what he sees. And you can tell him, you want to be leveling up now, you want to be buying this now, you want to be... going down this lane, or no, don't do that. And then at the end of it, you get a bunch of, I don't know if you get like any currency or anything, but you unlock, you know, a new hero or a new portrait or something.
So I was playing League of Legends last night, I was playing it against bots and with bots, and it was like, I think one of the things that kind of scares me about this whole process is that, yes, you can try and teach people the mechanics and all the difficult, like, you know, what works and what doesn't, and, you know, all the things to buy and the builds to use and everything. But I had so much fun last night just dicking about in this kind of sandbox thing with a bunch of AI. And it felt like a, you know, it's a cross between Gauntlet and, you know, an RTS game. And it's just really fun to explore and learn yourself. And I think it's that kind of trying to exist on that curve, and you know, that learning curve just is fun in itself. It will make me sad if there isn't the opportunity for players just to kind of sandbox their way through.
It has bots.
I mean, the whole community thing is they're even rewarding you for making forum posts. They're hosting everything.
Whoa!
Presumably it's going to be based on like karma rather than just sheer number.
Yeah. Everything you do, it contribute to the community that
expects
gets up.
More lolcats.
It's just like forums. Karma exchange systems where two people post in the same thread ultimately just upload each other's things.
Everything you do, then Valve are going to host everything themselves so they can judge what's happening. Just feeds back into the game, which is fairly remarkable. I'm surprised it didn't try out in TF2 first, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a really interesting idea because Valve have obviously been very good at creating functional, friendly communities. The Team Fortress 2 community, for example, you know, and things they've done, mechanics they've added, like you know, being able to taunt when you kill someone, that kind of thing, actually takes smack talk and that kind of unpleasantness out of the game by, you know, codifying it in that way. And so it's interesting to see, can Valve take a game which is, you know, naturally generates an unpleasant community and save it purely just through community tools?
Fuck.
Yeah, they're going to come around my house and kill me.
I've always heard that Heroes of New Earth community is pretty hostile to newcomers, but I've heard that League of Legends is better. Some people have said
there's a lot of they've had a quite all the front experience. End about League of Legends is learn, teach, learning bit. And I almost think that's like shooting yourself in the foot because, you know, the first thing a season player says, there's all this shit to learn, why are you still making mistakes? You know, like, you've got all these resources here. That's what I do anyway because I'm a dick.
It's funny, before today, I was excited about Dota 2 because I switched to your pronunciation now, I notice. because I tried to play League of Legends and there was no tutorial and no AI. The only way you could ever play the game was just to play online against real people. I think this was in beta. And of course, you know, it's a terrible way to learn the game because no one will tell you what's going on and you just fail and you fuck it up for your team. And like, even if they don't complain, I don't want to fuck it up for my team. Like, I don't want to be causing a bunch of other people's experiences to suck. And so I was excited about Valve, you know, adding AI and giving it a tutorial and that kind of stuff. And then you came in this morning, Tim, saying, oh, I played League of Legends last night. It was brilliant. I said, oh, didn't you find that players shouted at you? Oh, I didn't play against players. I played against the AI.
Yeah.
How did you learn? With a tutorial. So apparently all this has already been done. I just missed it.
Yeah. I played as a little man in a helicopter shooting fireballs and he had a Gatling gun. But I like that shit. That's good. I beat the shit out of a tree as
well. Does it take the same kind of license that Blizzard does with Steampunk, where you can just do whatever the fuck you like?
Yeah. It sounds like your role-playing avatar there.
Yeah. So, okay, that's Dota.
It's another game that Valve have bought, rather than just developing their own thing again.
I'm really interested to see whether it's going to be free or not, or whether it's going to be microtransactions or anything like that.
If this was a game that was made... I mean, the heroes that they're importing everything, does that mean that someone's... Was it all Ice Frog's work or was it someone else's work?
Well, all the models, I guess, originally came from Warcraft 3 stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, my helicopter dude last night was clearly a gyrocopter from the Warcraft 3 stuff. And like,
interesting legality.
But just like stuff like stats and whatever, the stats of the heroes and the stats of the...
That wasn't Warcraft stuff. I mean, Dota has 100 heroes. And, and so I think they were all bespoke for Dota.
But I mean, if you're a dude in Warcraft 3.
If you're a dude that made that and you're not Ice Frog or whatever, I don't know how this works.
I think the ownership of
it's
all this stuff
is
incredibly murky.
Yeah, that's why it's called Dota and it's not, you know...
Defense of the Ancients.
Yeah, it's not Defense of the Ancients. It doesn't stand for anything
anymore. Yeah, it's interesting. If you take the heroes, I mean, I guess Ice Frog made the map, so they're all right there, but he can't have made all 100 heroes, did he?
I'm assuming not. But then at the same time...
And even if they don't use your model, like if it's that name and that concept and role, I think you could claim that you've created it.
It's... This whole story is clearly an incredible story of how this mod got made. I think now it's impossible to get that story because so many people have ownership of it and so many great businesses have been built out of it.
Also, if you ask Valve, they won't let you talk to Ice Frog.
Really?
Yeah, I tried to get an interview with them for the Valve issue, in fact, and... Yeah, they went up for it.
It was Eric Johnson doing all the talking.
Admittedly, they hadn't announced Dota 2 at the time.
I mean, that's probably not Valve, though. I mean, Ice Frog won't say what his real name is.
Maybe it is Ice Frog.
He goes purely by Ice Frog and always has done, so no one knows what he's actually called.
Well, like I say, he might actually just be called Ice Frog.
He might actually be called Ice Frog.
Maybe he doesn't exist.
That would be awesome if he was actually an Ice Frog.
I'm not going that far.
Okay. Moving swiftly on.
So, Bioshock Infinite, then. Craig saw Bioshock Infinite.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Out of all the great games that are coming out in 2012, is this the best game that's coming out in 2012?
I only know one game that's coming out in 2012.
So we can definitely say that this is the best game coming out in 2012.
By far the most amazing game I've seen that's coming out in 2012.
I can't believe it's 2012. I feel like I have to get de-excited now. Because I can't stay excited for a whole year.
Yeah, I got real excited and then I went, what? Oh.
So... Sky? What? Where?
Sky or Shock?
Yeah.
Sky or Shock?
It's in the sky. It probably doesn't have anything to do with the original Bioshock universe.
Yeah, but there's a Big Daddy in the trailer.
Not Big Daddy, though. It's an alpha.
No, he's in the fish tank.
Yeah. Well, that's where they've got you there. That was actually a diver holding a conch shell. That wasn't a Big Daddy, apparently.
So, if it is set in the same universe, then it makes Andrew Ryan just look incredibly unoriginal. Founded this whole Undaughter Empire and just discovered what they already discovered on the surface 40 years ago.
Exactly. So, it's not. It's like the way Final Fantasy works, I think, in that they have a way of putting a game set within a different universe each time.
So, I'll make the point I keep making about this, but Ken Levine said, the Bioshock name should just mean... completely new experience that you've never had before, and you know that's what the Bioshock name really means. It doesn't mean underwater, but there's only been two Bioshock games, and one of them was set in the same place as the other one.
He didn't have control over that. It seemed a bit miffed when I mentioned it.
Really,
a little bit. Just
Bioshock like, doesn't exist.
He keeps on calling this a sequel to Bioshock, even though it's not actually a sequel to Bioshock. If you listen to what he's saying,
was Bioshock 2 better than Bioshock 1?
In some ways, its combat was better.
Yeah, I think its combat was.
And it had a really good story, but its story wasn't as good or as powerful or shocking as the
entirely
first.
Entirely unnecessary story.
Yeah. Do you think it was less shocking and less interesting just because it wasn't a new place?
That was part of it as well. But
for me, the story was less interesting because both of them have some big thinker with high ideals ranting at you the whole time about their philosophy and stuff.
Yeah.
And in the case of Bioshock 2, I just found what's her name?
I can't remember either.
I can't remember the name of them. Exactly. Like, I really did try to follow what she was saying and what her set of beliefs and philosophy was, but it just seemed to be vague and sort of just rhetorical and not really kind of anything you could found a sort of ideology on.
And
what's the kind of ideology of Bioshock Infinite then?
What did I say the phrase was?
We hate foreigners.
It's pretty much xenophobic evangelicalism or something like that. It's American exceptionalism gone wrong. Right. Everyone knows
so
that.
It's a big flying city. They're floating around.
They were meant to be. The city is meant to be an example of how great and good America are. Yeah.
It's like a floating world sphere.
Yeah, it is a floating world sphere, in fact.
Okay.
But it's also a Death Star.
Where's it going?
No one knows, that's the thing.
It was just travelling around the world, showing off for a while, and then...
Something horrible happened.
And it just rose above the clouds, and no one's seen it since.
except the people on it.
Yeah.
Well, where is it?
But there's also the as the story progresses, what happens is you're a Pinkerton agent, and there is a man on the ground who hires you to find this. He actually knows where it is. He hires you to go up and collect a woman from there.
So I hope you just like fly a kite and hope you catch it. Whee!
So this is basically Up, but with
racism.
Racism and plasmids.
Yeah, yeah, up pretty much.
Brilliant.
Actually, don't quote me on that.
Wasn't it Up already racist? Allegedly, joke. It's a joke, Disney. It's a joke.
Okay. I thought, what?
I was joking. Anyway.
Okay, fine. Okay. So, yeah.
It'll be good. It looks like a good shooter. And the first image I saw of it was the phrase, is there a whole duty to protect against the foreign hordes?
That's quite strong.
It's very strong, and games generally aren't that strong. And it looks a bit like, everyone seems to think he's reacting to the Tea Party movement in America. It turns out he started to write this way before the Tea Party movement started up in America, because the Tea Party movie was in happened years and years and years ago. They're just kind of usurping the name and crazy attitude.
He seems like a clever man, that Ken Levine.
Yes, he's very clever.
Yeah. Don't like clever people, they intimidate me.
As long as they're making the games, it's fine.
Yeah. Does it, so when you watched it, it was like we were just saying Bioshock 2 was a better shooter.
Yeah.
Is that fair? Does it, when you were watching the demo, did it feel like a good shooter as well as a kind of big?
It felt like quite a messy shooter because they've upped the player count that you're fighting against quite a lot. I honestly couldn't tell. There wasn't that much in terms of like big battles going on. There was a lot of stuff going on, but it was so compressed that I would hate to sort of suggest it was one thing or the other.
So that demo looks like something they've been spent a long time working on.
Was it called a vertical slice of the game?
Yeah.
I hate that term.
Yeah.
Say that, bro.
It's just a way of showing bits of the game, basically. Yeah. Just say that.
Okay. Cool.
It seems super scripted, but
he was eager to point out that the game is not that scripted at all.
Is it? Were they talking about it being like Rapture? Is you have moments where you have quite a wide space where you can go, you can explore horizontally, and you don't have to go kind of straight.
Horizontal slice.
Yeah, horizontal slice. But it's still this linear progression through the levels.
Yeah,
and I always like. We've been talking about System Shock a lot in the office. One of the things I like about System Shock is the idea that I don't necessarily want to go back to where I went before, but it's the feeling that they still exist and you can still go to them.
Yeah.
I think there'll be a bit more back and forth in this one. There's a huge travel rule system. I think the thing with Bioshock is they could cut bits of the world off, and this, you can see everything.
Yeah.
And if they cut the sky rule off, then it'll be a bit strange, to be honest.
And I don't know if you guys have played Metroid on the GameCube, but that's quite
good.
That's
so boring.
Oh, it's all right.
That was the most boring game I've ever played.
All right, fine. Well, maybe if he's got the same kind of imagination, a bit of racism, you'd like it.
Yeah. I love racism.
I'm hoping there's going to be a moment in Bioshock Infinite where one of the floating islands, the balloons burst.
Yeah.
Because I just want to see a giant chunk of it just fall out of the sky. Exactly.
Yeah. All the tech. Honestly, the reason it took so long is they're inventing the tech to allow those buildings to move independently, so they're not. I don't think they're scripted.
Are they voxels?
It's kind of on these things.
It's one voxel.
The fact that they move around like that, how does the metal rails between them work then?
Bendy,
lots of creaking.
Yeah, bendy metal rails.
Gimbals.
Yeah. I was going to say something, and I've completely forgotten. Obviously, not good in a podcast.
No. Dead air.
Move on to Duke.
Yes. Duke Nukem.
Hands up, who's excited? Ah, you can't see the hands up, people.
It could be all
because there are no hands up. Also because it's a podcast.
But. I've actually kind of reached the point where I'm not excited about Duke Nukem Forever. And I just...
Did it take 13 years
to
get to that point?
Yeah, well, it's because
we're all adults. To be absolutely fair, I don't think I was that excited about it to start with. It was a thing you looked at and went, gosh, that's taken a long time. Gosh, they've spent a lot of money. Gosh. nothing has come of this.
The trouble is that people go weird when a game takes a long time to make. So talk to anyone about episode 3 and they're like, oh, it's going to be, you know, a full Half-Life 3 game, or it's never going to be made. No, neither of those things are going to happen. It's going to be another episode, exactly like the other episodes.
Yeah.
They just haven't made it yet. Like, like taking a long time about something doesn't mean it's going to be completely different to everything else that's ever been made. So Duke Nukem Forever, everyone's like, oh, it's going to be fucking terrible, or it's going to be fucking amazing. There's going to be another game that will, of course, score about 70%. And it'll be quite fun. It'll have some sort of halfway interesting stuff, but it'll basically be a bit lackluster compared to...
It was a bit weird when Stalker came out.
Yeah.
Like, this is good.
Yeah.
Enjoy playing it.
I remember when we got it in the office, and it, like, there's... I think we build up games to such a level that you're expecting some kind of manna from heaven style. And it's just like, it's just a burnt disc, and you stick it in your PC and it crashes on loading, and you have to sort the DRM out and all the rest of it. Like, Duke is it's just a game, and it might be quite good, but they've released 3 screenshots and
shiny.
It's quite shiny, and it's still the same misogynistic twat face cliche.
None of us want to play that character in the office.
I know it's just a British thing, like, but I just don't...
I know plenty of British misogynists.
But I'm not interested in playing that. I didn't really like Duke Nukem 3D. Is that sacrilege?
I didn't like it that much.
I love Duke Nukem 3D, but I don't like Duke Nukem himself. Like, I played it when I was quite young, and it was just an incredibly exciting, like... world, really. Like, it's just so bizarre. Like, every level was something completely different, and every time you got a new weapon, it was completely powerful and weird. There was a shrink ray where you could fire at a mirror and the shrink ray would bounce off it, hit you and shrink you, so you could crawl through vents and stuff.
Okay.
That was genius. And it's just a really inventive and fun shooter. But yeah, Duke, I don't think I even noticed that he was a misogynistic prick at the time. I didn't like him, but I was just playing me in that game. I completely ignored anything he ever said or did. And going back to it, I think I'm probably going to be more bothered by horrible lines because I actually focus on writing in games now. But I think I'll probably just play in Russian. Is it going to be on Steam?
Yeah, of course it's going to be on
Steam. So on Steam, there's different localized versions, you can just right-click on Steam and say choose installed language. Like, I play Portal in Spanish and stuff.
The thing is, even in a foreign language, I don't think you're going to be able to avoid the hideousness.
But it's going
to
be hilarious if it's Russian.
Well, do you think all Russians are hilarious?
It will be just titty bars and kind of...
I was reading, because Al Beckham went to play it for us, and I was reading his preview this morning, and the game starts with you peeing, you know, holding down left mouse button to pee, letting it go to stop.
Can you aim?
You can aim. You can write your name and stuff.
Apparently, you can go into the stalls... Take a poo out of the toilets and then use that to, like, draw on the wall.
What?
That I hadn't heard.
And then you go out and there's, like, a whiteboard. You can draw on that with a marker pen. That's a kind of nice bit of interactivity.
Take the feces and do it with that.
But then there's, like, a big fight against a boss inside a football stadium. And then it cuts, like, screen wipe, next level or something like that. And you're playing a Duke Nukem arcade cabinet and there's just a woman's head at the bottom of the screen bobbing up and down.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so I don't think just foreign language is going to fix it.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
There's a... Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what language that
Russian
would be
Duke
acceptable.
You.
What language that would be acceptable in? Australian, maybe?
Maybe she's just like a mechanic working on the machine or something.
Yeah, let's just...
not as bad as we think.
Just tell ourselves that.
Like... Yeah, but like my 15-year-old me thinks that's hilarious. 30-year-old me.
To be honest, 30-year-old you was laughing.
He was pretty laughing. All right.
The poo and the wee is
poo.
Acceptable.
I don't know.
It's just
I've got why.
It's the hate.
If she's
it's the hating really on women stuff.
Did you ever play The Darkness on the Xbox?
No.
So there's a moment in that where you sit and you just watch TV with your girlfriend. It's really cute, and it's really, like, you spend a minute and a half or 2 minutes watching TV, and you've got your arm around your girlfriend. And my wife said to me, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm watching TV with my girlfriend." But no, you're not. You're playing a game. She's like, "Yeah, I'm watching TV in the game with my girlfriend in the game." And she just looked at me like a complete twat. So being caught, being given a blowjob whilst playing an arcade machine in a game.
Covered in poo.
Like,
Can he draw on the lady's head in poo?
Yeah.
It's an Xbox as well. I thought it was an Xbox he was playing, rather than an arcade game.
It may be an Xbox, I'm not sure. Yeah. I thought it was an arcade game.
Then it deserves
a little bit of dignity.
But then the point is that after that, you're going
to,
you know, get in a car and drive around for a little bit and then shoot people with shotguns for a little bit. And there's going to be a little bit of ingenuity maybe with the shrinking, like, ah, remember this, folks. But I don't think they've got any ambitions to go any further than that.
Well, why have they put all the drawing stuff in it?
Why not?
Just keep it in and take it out.
Yeah.
Like, I don't actually care about random interaction like that, like being able to draw on walls and stuff. What was fun is what Tom says is, you know, making yourself invisible, because that, you know, requires a certain amount of puzzling that thing out and ingenuity and
would
that kind of thing.
Would you prefer to play a new Borderlands or a new Duke Nukem?
New Borderlands.
Yeah, new Borderlands.
Okay. Maybe they're making a new Borderlands as well. Because I think Gearbox is one of my favourite developers. I really enjoy everything they do.
I mean, Duke's not that far from coming out, really. I mean, it's the start of next year, so after
I think it'll come out on April 1st. I just think that'd be the best way to do the PR campaign for it.
And after that, Borderlands the MMO or something, which would be brilliant.
I want Brothers in Arms 4.
I want Brothers in Arms 4 as well. I want to know why the fucking haunted hospital. What happened in that shit?
Yeah.
I want a sci-fi version of Brothers in Arms.
Ah, oh, that'd be good. Gears
or
in
modern
Arms.
Day one, maybe. Yeah.
No, not a modern day one.
Or fantasy one, where you're like a squad of knights.
I believe that's called The Hunted, isn't it? So, finally, of all the video game, PC game news we want to talk about is Deus Ex. So Tom has, I think, a rant prepared or an explanation prepared.
We've got a preview of Deus Ex in the latest issue, but there's been an interview since then where one of the developers has asked whether there's dynamic difficulty in the game, which is one of those questions where they were probably never going to tell anyone unless they were specifically asked that.
Yeah.
But he said, yes, the difficulty scales depending on your experience, how much experience you've got. So the harder, the more experience you've got.
So experience points, not experience playing the game.
Yes. As you earn experience points, the game subtly gets harder in some way. And they haven't said anything about how this works at all. They just literally confirmed that there is that relationship in it.
Okay, so
and so, of course, the internet has completely exploded. Ah, it'll be fucking shit. I said it'll be fucking shit.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just because of Oblivion, really.
So, Oblivion did a bad job of difficulty scaling.
It did the same thing, but it did it poorly. It doesn't need...
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, Oblivion wasn't... it wasn't bad anyway, as far as I'm concerned. But if you hated Oblivion's level scaling, it's not because level scaling is inherently a terrible idea. It's that Oblivion did it poorly and didn't sort of communicate well. And just the leveling system in general in Oblivion is a bit weird. Like, if you want to be really fast in Oblivion or really strong, then if you want to be really, really good with the sword, say, you shouldn't pick that as one of your major skills, because your major skills define when you level up. So if that's a minor skill, it will start lower, but when you level up, it won't actually level you up. So you can stay at level 1 and have a sword skill of 100. And so you'll be fighting lower level stuff and you'll be way outclassing the game in sword skill. Whereas if you pick it as a major, then the game knows to scale the whole thing to it. So it's a terrible system in Oblivion. And they've just said nothing about how the Deus Ex one works.
So you've seen Deus Ex.
You
know quite a bit about the developers and kind of you've met quite a few of them. What would you do to make, if you assume they are going to do difficulty scaling, how would you implement it in their game?
First of all, I'd never ever tell anyone I was doing it. Even if it was asked point blank, I'd just deny that it was in there. And then if someone, you know, called me up on it later and said, oh, we added that in a day zero patch. because it actually hurts the system if people know about it. Like, even if you do it perfectly, people don't want to know that as they're leveling up, it's hurting them in some way. And in practice, it probably isn't. It's probably not to the point where the game gets harder as you gain experience. It's that the game doesn't get dramatically easier if you gain experience.
So, I guess the way that you could do it is you don't change the mechanics, so you don't change how hard people are, but you just make them more aware of everything that you can do. So if you are playing a stealthy character, making them more, you know, look harder for you and trying to tie that into the fiction. So, you know, as you go around killing people and doing bad shit and whatever the missions are for Deus Ex, if they are aware of you and care more about it, then that would be good.
I think also, like, the way that a difficulty could be adjusted in this game is probably not going to be a matter of hit points and gun damage, because... Yeah. I've seen it in action, and it's all about, like, you get a headshot, you kill someone. Yeah. Like, that's just a fundamental rule of this world. And, the balance for how many shots it takes to kill somebody is not really a difficulty issue. It's more about the feel of the game.
Yeah.
And I think, if anything, this is probably going to be, like, if you have masses of ammo, you're going to find less ammo. And stuff like that. It'll be, if you're slaughtering every enemy in the level and you're clearly finding it too easy, it'll probably put a few more enemies in the level.
Yeah. And stuff like this, hacking minigames and all that kind of stuff in there, so those things could probably...
That's going to be weird though, isn't it? Because if you've got more enemies, then you'd expect to get more XP.
harder. It should be said that dynamic difficulty has rarely been done well. Yeah. I'm just saying, we shouldn't necessarily assume that it's going to be done badly. Do you think that the whole concept is fundamentally... Well, I mean, completely unacceptable.
Given what we know of this development team, the moment we heard it was the game was being announced, we were all just like, that's going to be shit, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then it turns out it's actually not just going to be good, it looks to be very good.
Yeah.
So, assuming that dynamic development could be bad.
When you went to AC, you just came away gibbering about it.
Pretty much. Yeah. It was just like, as I was watching it, I was kind of thinking, oh, this isn't as bad as I thought. Oh, this is good. Wait, this is really good. Like, oh, this is actually like Deus Ex in some parts.
Yeah. Yeah, and when I saw it at Gamescom, they showed the same level 3 times and said we could have done it more ways as well, but we only had enough time for 3 times.
You see, I really want to play it.
Yeah, me too.
It just looks like it is different to Deus Ex in the terms of it's really slick and satisfying. There's melee kills that are kind of a big part of it. Melee kills were a big part of Deus Ex for me, but they weren't...
Yeah, but that was just you waving...
It was pretty obvious the game designer didn't know I was going to make them a big part of it. It was just like...
Yeah, that's the flapping sword, isn't it?
That was the baton, yeah. It's like the least satisfying melee ever. But yeah, and they've just picked up on that and realised, hey, we can make this look cool.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that, if it does work.
So what are you guys playing at the moment? Graham, what are you playing?
I am playing F1 2010.
Really? Meow.
That game looks very wet.
Whenever they showed it off, they always showed it off in the rain because they were very proud of how the rain looked and how it pulled nicely on the track and stuff like that.
But we live in Britain.
Yeah, and
it's not very impressive.
Like,
it's going to annoy us.
Most F1s don't take place in the wet.
You know, if it rains too much and, you know, before a Formula One race, they cancel the race. Yeah,
we don't have good enough rain effects, we have to cancel the race.
So are you enjoying F1?
I'm enjoying it a lot. I'm finding it quite difficult. Yeah. I'm playing it on the normal difficulty level, just trying to do a career, and I've gone with Williams because I thought they were still good, but it turns out they're not anymore.
Okay.
Since I last watched F1, Williams aren't nearly as good as they once were, but it's really hard.
Like, I think driving an F1 car would be probably pretty
hard.
Are
you expected to kind of hop in and then win every race first?
No, like on normal difficulty level where I'm playing, I have objectives that my team has set for me where they expect me to qualify 10th or better and to finish a race 8th or better. And I can always do the qualifying thing, but as soon as there's 24 other cars on the road, I get really screwed up by it. But yeah, I don't have a lot to say about it. It's really pretty. I like driving.
I don't understand driving games. How are they different from each other? Why is this racing game different to other racing games?
Different cars is a big part of it.
How are cars different to each other? I don't understand that.
Cars feel different in terms of how they brake and how fast you get to go and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, I think we should educate Tom by making him play F1 and then Dirt 2.
Dirt 2 is really good.
Yeah, Dirt 2 is fun.
But is it a case of like you just like playing it because you haven't played a game that feels like that for a while, or is it like there's a perfect car handling model out there somewhere and you're getting closer to it?
Oh.
Because when I'm playing GTA, I can tell cars feel different and I have certain preferences. Mm-hmm. I don't actually like the fastest one there is, but I like the one a little bit down from that. Or I like the police cars because they're kind of generally a good mix of speed and handling.
I find it's two things in Formula One. The first thing I enjoy is the practice, because Formula One, you've got a race weekend. You get the practice and then you get the qualifying and then you get the race itself. The practice I'm just using to learn the tracks because on my first season, I've not played a lot of these tracks before in any other game. And then that's just kind of... It's just you playing against the track, and that's really satisfying. Learning, because playing it where there's a guide on the road telling you when to corner, and it changes colour based on whether you should be slowing down or speeding up. And it's really satisfying to just kind of trying to take those corners and take them better and keep to the racing line, and just sitting back with a 360 controller doing that's really satisfying and really relaxing. The other side of it is really, really stressful, and that's the qualifying and the actual race itself, where you've got other cars trying to pass you and you screw up one corner and you drop 6 places. And so you're holding the controller so tightly, trying to make every corner. And I find that really compelling as well.
I play racing games, I always just end up scraping the car alongside the track.
You know, you can't do that in F1 2010, though. It's realistic enough where, you know, bits will start just start falling off your car.
I mean, not intentionally. Yeah. It's just what's happening. I just can't control them. I can never adjust myself. I can never actually figure out what the hell I'm supposed to be doing at any point.
I think it makes me sad sometimes that we think of games with cars in them as racing games rather than driving games, because very often the driving is the most fun stuff. And like that's what I always used to love about the old Colin McRae games, is you just go for a drive in the country and you go really fast, but it was never felt like a race. It just felt like
play fuel.
Yeah.
Which was just, what was it, 2,000 kilometers squared, America, the theme park. They took all the cool bits of America and merged them together. And then you drove around it. And I didn't do any of the races in
that. I played that for ages as well. I played that like I played Fallout.
And it's just a game about travelling.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about exploring. It's not about racing. You just, you know, you drive and you watch the scenery go past. Awesome. And that's really satisfying.
Did you ever play Motocross Madness? It was an old Microsoft
I did actually,
bike,
yeah.
So I used to love those games. Really, really enjoyed them.
They were a lot of fun. But to answer your question, Tom, about the kind of driving model, there's no perfect driving model out there that I'm aspiring to or anything like that, but you can tell when it feels right, and you can tweak the feel of the cars in F1 2010, because you can, you know, you level up as you go along and you improve your car, and it goes, you can speak to your engineer in the cockpit and say, I want my car to have more understeer, oversteer, to have a higher top speed, that kind of thing. And
surely he'll make higher top speed every time.
The correct time as well.
he'll make recommendations. If he thinks you're doing crap, then he'll say, maybe you shouldn't be going so fast and I'll give you more grip, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, because you have to slow down in corners.
That's what confuses me. Yeah, that's what gets me.
Portals so that one's in front of me and one's at 90 degrees. On with all my forward momentum.
I find it very difficult to talk about why I enjoy playing racing games or to write about them experientially, because it's just, I went around the track, I didn't crash that time. I went around the track the next time, I crashed a little
bit. That's exactly why I don't enjoy them.
Yeah.
I enjoy playing them, but describing them and explaining why is difficult.
Talked about it for quite a long time, though.
Yeah.
Craig, what are you playing?
Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're playing it non-hardcore.
I don't want to be. Fallout's never been about survival for me. It's been about running around the world with a sledgehammer twatting people.
Sounds
fun. Is what I'm doing again right now.
How many people have you twatted with a sledgehammer?
I haven't got one yet. I'm 6 hours in and haven't found one.
So Craig's already, you pretty much completed it?
I completed it once already. Okay. Now I'm doing the sort of I started off going around the edge of the map to see how far I can get without not being able to get any further. So right now I'm just like crawling through a ditch somewhere trying to get past some rad scorpions.
Nice.
Yeah.
You enjoying it?
Yeah, it's really fun. It's the same game though, you know, and it has all the same problems that Fallout had. It's the same engine problems, it's the same ugly characters, it's the same AI that runs into walls and all that kind of stuff. But it's got an amazing world and it's got an amazing sort of atmosphere to it.
Cool.
Yeah.
What's Vegas like in it?
Okay, so the thing is, it's much smaller than modern day Vegas, but apparently this is based on Vegas from back then when it was. So it's just a couple of streets, really.
Would you recommend people buy it and play it?
Totally, yeah. It's great fun. It's more Fallout 3, and Fallout 3 was, you know, I think we underscored it when Ross had a chance to play it, because he didn't get a chance to play it the way we played it.
Yeah. Is it the thing that we kind of really emphasized was that it was meant to be funnier and darker and sillier because it was Obsidian making it, and they have like a much deeper history with the franchise than, I fucking hate the word franchise. They had a deeper history with the Fallout games than Bethesda, who kind of rocked up with the IP. Is that true?
I honestly don't think so. I think it's as good as in those terms. I don't think they've got enough interesting stuff around the world. And I think partly because when Fallout 3 came out, I hadn't played any of the Fallout games. I was just, you know, an FPS guy. The stuff in Fallout 3 was actually quite shocking.
Yeah.
And so, again, so when you come across cannibals in Fallout New Vegas, you've already seen the cannibals in Fallout 3. They're doing everything the same. The writing's a little bit funnier, but it's not particularly different. It doesn't feel any different to me at all, to be honest.
Okay.
It's totally worth playing, and everyone should play it, and no one should follow a central storyline.
Have you played Fallout 2 or 1?
No.
Because like the stuff in Fallout 3 felt shocking, I think, because it had been a long time. But I think a lot of the same stuff had also been in Fallout 2. Yeah. Like Fallout 2, you had slavers and you had cannibals and you discovered all those towns. It'd just been such a long time that, whereas between New Vegas and Fallout 3, obviously, it's not been long at all.
No.
And it's the same engine.
It is very much the same engine, which is a problem.
Do you think that is a mistake to make it the same engine?
Not really. It's a weird thing, because if they made it a different engine, it wouldn't be out now.
Right.
They were taken because they had all these assets and all this technology available to them, but it clearly holds the game back.
Is it more colourful?
A little bit, yeah. The skies are blue. My overriding memory of Fallout 3 is just green.
Yeah.
Green and grey, whereas this is slightly bluer.
And
Vegas is very bright.
I'm certain it's going to sell absolutely bucket loads, and I think it's purely down to, well, not just purely down to, but the reason I want to play it is because it's Vegas. Washington just never really interested me at all.
Yeah, Vegas isn't that big of a deal with the game. It's mostly wasteland.
Right.
Vegas is just in the corner somewhere. The tropes of Vegas are around. Like, there's a bunch of people who are Roman legionnaires, but it's clearly based on Caesar's palace and that kind of stuff.
Cowboys?
It's got a cowboy feel to it.
Cool.
Right now my character's got a cowboy hat.
Does it for me.
And it's got country music all the way through it, and you're just wandering the wasteland. I don't have a horse, though.
Can you get a horse?
I don't think so.
Oh, a horse. Yeah. No, I'm going to have to play it. Tom, what are you playing?
I was going to talk about Worms Reloaded, but I've told you guys that story now. So I'm just going to talk briefly about Supreme Commander.
Okay.
Because that's actually what I've been playing much more. Supreme Commander 2, this is. Although
it's got much, much better.
It's got much more like Supreme Commander 1, which is interesting. So just recently, my criticism in my review is that the AI was pretty weak. I could take on 4 hards at once and just win every time. And they patched that pretty steadily. Like, they improved it quite soon after release, and they kept on improving it. And it's got really good now. It's like definitely much harder than it used to be. Then a while back, they put out some DLC, which is a bunch of new units, including some mega, mega experimentals, like really things that take like 5 minutes to build and 8,000 energy, and that just have masses and masses of hit points, which are, again, more like Supreme Commander 1. Like, they're like that unique feeling Supreme Commander 1 of having like this mega project that was just going on in your base at all times, and you'd have to kind of try and survive until it got out, and then once it got out, it would just own everything. So the Monkey Lord for the Cybrans is just absolutely ridiculous. It's massive death hose that just incinerates everything in split seconds, and just a crazy amount of hit points. That's really good, and it also has a bunch of bigger maps. So they're still 4v4 is the biggest type, so 8 players. But the actual like scale of the maps is even bigger than Seaton's Clutch. So there's an awesome desert one that's all these big mesas and ravines and stuff that just has that feel of, like, when you properly play against it, against AI. We played, like, 6 versus 2 with 2 AIs just being crazy, crazy cheating, massive resources monsters. And it had this just amazing feel of, like, battles going on everywhere. You know, there'd be experimentals clashing down in the southwest, and then up in the north there'd be this huge air attack going on, and just at all times there was something awesome happening on
Does
the map.
It finally feel like that trailer they released for the first subcom?
Yeah, exactly, and that's what I was thinking during that game, actually. It was just that thing of, like, you're seeing an awesome battle happening, then you zoom out and you see, like, the strategic big picture, then you zoom in somewhere else and something awesome is happening there as well. And it's just total, like, sci-fi nerdgasm. It's just
I expected us all to be playing StarCraft 2 in the office fairly regularly, and that's still going on. Like, Rich is just completely obsessed with it. But SubCom 2 has taken hold
pretty
seriously.
We kind of, I don't think we've ever really stopped playing it for any major length of time since it came out. Like,
can you set a time limit? Because you guys keep on...
Yeah,
5 past 2, 10 past 2. Guys, lunch finished a little while ago.
It's really annoying because it takes about an hour to play a really good game of it.
Yeah.
And our lunch break is an hour, but we also have to go and get food. So that 10 minutes that we spent getting food is just eats into.
This is why you should just bring food in, like I do.
Yeah.
So we had and that game where it was 2 versus 6, was so epic and so awesome that when it got to the end of lunch, we can carry on playing it. But we just alt-tabbed back to normal PCs and left it running in the background at the slowest speed. You can't pause it, but you can run it at like a tenth of normal speed. So like all the battles are going on in slow motion for the rest of the day, and then we resumed it after work.
What did we originally give it?
I gave it 85, I think, or something like that.
What points are
that? I think it's, if I was reviewing it today and it was new today, I'd give it 90.
Well, that's an impressive up for them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. The other thing is, after the DLC, they changed the way the economy works, so that this is for all players, whether you've got the DLC or not. And it now doesn't deduct money from things you queue up until they actually happen. So basically, it sounds like a small tweak, but it means right from the word go, you can plan out your entire base, like every factory you're going to build, all the mass extractors you're going to take all the way around the map, and then just let it run. And it lets you really focus on controlling your units in battles and stuff. And it's also just, it makes you more ambitious with your plans, because before, like, you knew you couldn't afford to build all those mass extractors. You couldn't queue up three experimentals or whatever, or, you know, three different types. And so you just didn't. And then when you did have the money, you were too busy doing something else, you just forgot to do it. Yeah. And so now you're just making crazy huge armies.
Because I think the issue I always had with Supreme Commander 1 is that my economy just crashed all the time.
Yeah.
And that was because I don't think it's necessarily anything wrong with the interface or the way the economy worked. I think it was the roadblocks they had with the tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 mass extractors and everything else. But they seemed to, rather than fixing that problem, they took off all the kind of flexibility and interesting bits that you could do with this subcom economy model. But now they seem to have put all that back in without the faff of the tier 1, tier 2.
Yeah, they. I think they did a good job in subcom 2 of taking out all the interesting choices and putting them into a separate screen where you can see what the interesting choices are and see what leads to what, how much it's going to cost you, and have a very simple system of how you get that stuff. Whereas that one was just kind of a nightmare. And also it was just strategically less interesting, because if someone was tech 3 and you were tech 2, didn't matter whether you'd specialize in the counter to their unit, because they could build the counter to your unit, tech 3, and it'd be better than yours. Like, whatever you did, they could fuck you over because they got to that point quicker. Subcom 2 doesn't have that, and also it doesn't have the economy crashes, even though they've gone back to the Subcom 1 economy model, because it's still not quite the same as Subcom 1. Subcom 1 was pure rate-based, so things didn't cost like 500 minerals or 500
which is calculus,
metal.
Isn't it? Discussion of rates is they're expecting people to do calculus.
It's going to cost you like 15,000 mass in total, but the point is it's going to cost you 16 mass a second. Do you have 16 mass a second coming in that you can spare? And the answer is, you know, yes when you start building it, but then no when you suddenly need a tank later on.
I'm sure programmers and game designers really understand that system perfectly. Well, Guild Wars has exactly the same issue. Like,
That's rate-based, isn't it?
It's all about kind of, you do damage, but it doesn't take a chunk of your health away. It decreases your health at a certain rate.
Yeah, I sort of understood that playing Guild Wars, though. Like, I liked it when I saw two people were buffing me or something, and I could see like four up arrows on my health, and I knew I could take a bunch of damage because it would just be regenerating that quickly. But the problem was that when you ran out of mass completely, which you always did very quickly, everything would build at the rate you were getting mass in, which is very, very slowly.
So
rather than something stopping or failing or cancelling or anything, it would just all carry on going and saying, I'm still building this factory, I'm still building this experimental, I'm still building all these units you asked for. It's just going to take, you know, half an hour.
you basically had to diagnose the problem, didn't you?
So with this one, it's still, when it gets to the point where you've queued up this factory and it's going to build, it will build it if you have the resources. If it doesn't, it's not going to like sap your economy like a vampire. It's just going to wait until you do and then do it.
So the one thing I used to love about Subcom was when the artillery fired, it would pull away your mass, like it would take a chunk out of your mass. And if you're generating it at a certain point, it would kind of, like, the bar would shoot down to the left, and so you kind of got barely any, and then it would just creep back up again. It's like they sucked all that metal up, made one giant bullet, and fired it. That was cool.
So it's like we should talk to these guys.
Yeah.
About what they've done with the game.
I Mel, Chris, Taylor, and off, actually, they seem very happy that we like
it. I kind of want to know, you know, how many people they've got working on it still. Because TF2 has always been, they've never gone down. They never reduced the team. But they started with quite a small team of game with like 15 guys.
I do wish that, I think Gaspowered, I imagine, will find it a struggle because they're working in a niche market, and we can't pretend that artists are anything other than niche. They don't have the resources and marketing ability that a company like Blizzard do, so they can't spend 5 years making one game. So they're existing project to project, and I can't help but think that Demigod being on Starlock exclusive game was just a disaster for them. If Demigod was on Steam, I would definitely buy it and I would definitely play it.
And they had a botched launch because of miscommunication between them and Stardock too. It didn't seem to be anyone's fault exactly. It was just they weren't working as closely as they should have been, and so they misunderstood the way servers worked.
We gave Demigod
like
a decent score, didn't we?
Yeah, like we really 80, 81 or something like that.
And I'm sure that if that was on Steam now, and they were working on it in the same way they're working on Supreme Commander 2 and improving the AI and making it better units and all the rest of it. You know, where could they be? You know,
yeah.
It just seems sad. Because I really like.
Maybe the reason they're carrying on with Supcom is because they've actually been quite successful with it, and they don't. You know, it's sustaining them. I'm still surprised every time I hear people talking about it, and still surprised every time I hear people saying they've updated it, because I'm sat there not playing it, going, "What the hell are they added to this game that these guys are still playing it for all this time?"
We do. We are finding it like on the blog when we talk about Supcom, we do get a bunch of commenters coming on saying, "Yeah, I really like this game. It's awesome. They keep updating it." A bunch of hardcore Supcom 1 fans who didn't like it coming back and saying, "Oh, that's cool. They were making it more like the game I liked." A bunch of people who just didn't pay attention at first are coming back to it and realizing it's really good. And there's also just a load of people who just liked it the first time around. They liked the first game. They like the second game. They know they're different. They're able to like two different games.
Never.
I recommend that if you see Supcom on sale somewhere, just snap it up. Or Supcom 2, rather. I think it's a great. Yeah.
What is it? £8 on Amazon, I think.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's just one of the things about PC gaming, isn't it? The games. So
wait half a day and everything's happening. Yeah.
One of our friends, one of the PlayStation mags, has started to get really into PC gaming, basically because he sits next to PC Gamer.
By osmosis.
Yeah, and we basically convinced him. He's just bought a stupid PC, but he's like snapping up games on Amazon.
Yeah.
And basically, all those games are Steam codes and Steam download codes.
Yeah, Supcom 2, you can add your CD key to Steam with a retail copy, and it will just
Dawn of War
to your Steam account.
There's a big list on Steam's forums actually of games that do this.
It's really useful. There's actually like an official Steam list of, hey, here are the games you can do that with.
He's so used to paying full price for console games or at best trading prices, where it's like 30 quid. It's like, I linked him to the Napoleon and Empire Game of the Year edition. Now, Napoleon Total War and Empire Total War, whatever you think of them, they are big games. Then it's got all the DLC and all the extra campaigns in it. And it's just got like an extra bunch of bonus shit in it. It's like, it was £25 on Steam. That seems a good deal. Yeah. It was £17 on Amazon. That's a lifetime of game you could spend just playing.
The funny thing about this is he's got the monitor, he's got all the games. He hasn't got his PC yet. No.
He's sitting there waiting for
this. Is, if you listen to PlayStation Magazine's podcast, it's Owen.
Yeah. So he is properly traitorizing the PlayStation.
He's playing.
Also,
Minecraft
he listens to this podcast. So hello, Owen.
Hello, Owen. Yeah. We're going to talk about Minecraft for him in a next podcast. Yeah. Owen is a funny man. I think that's about it, really. We're going to do questions from Twitter.
Yeah, we had to ask some more questions.
Okay.
After what happened last time. Where are we here? What's today? I'll try and find today's. Someone fill the dead air.
Okay. So we should explain. If this podcast has been a little bit shit, we're sorry. It's the second time we've had to record it due to a disastrous loss.
Think it's been better than the last one, to be
honest.
Do you
really?
Yeah.
Okay, starting with Duncan Gear and work up, I suppose.
Okay. So
I met him earlier, he's really nice.
Yeah.
He's, hello, Duncan.
Hello, Duncan.
I haven't met Duncan.
He's very tall, and he used to have enormous sideburns that were kind of, it was kind of like a proper Father Giles style side thing.
We should do this at every Twitter user.
the length of this Twitter is like that.
He doesn't have them now, and I think it's a mistake, frankly. We should bring them back.
He'll be listening to this. So.
Yeah. Duncan works at Wired, by the way. So, hello. Duncan says, why do you think Civ 5 hasn't had as positive reception as Civ 4 did?
It seemed to drop off, didn't it? I haven't played it yet. And I was super excited about it, and because I keep trying to get into Civ, and I never quite do it. I love Galactic Civilizations, and so I'm sure like the mechanics would speak to me, but I just haven't quite got into it yet. And I was really, really excited about it. Like when it came out, I was downloading it at home. I think I had a week off at the time and all ready to play it. I was so anxious about it finishing downloading because my home connection isn't as good as our work one. And ticked down to the final seconds and then it would finish. Like, thank God, I've got it now. I still haven't played it.
I don't know. It's a weird one. Civ 5's great.
Aren't we all just playing fun games at the moment?
There are lots of amazing, great games at the moment. I'm sure that people will still be playing Civ 5 in 2 or 3 years' time.
Does it seem less special or important than Civ 4 did? Like, Civ 4 seemed like this feels like an intermediate step, whereas Civ 4 felt like they changed a bunch of stuff.
Civ 4 came out, and then it had 3 expansions. It had Beyond the Sword, Warlords. I think there's one other.
Fall from Heaven? They released that was like a mod.
They also made a game that was based
on Sid Meier's Pirates.
No. They made a game on the Civ 4 technology that was on colonization.
Colonization, not
kind of mental
pirates.
Yeah.
That was like a, it was a remake of.
But it was based on Civ 4's tech and it was Civ 4 colonization. Great, was it?
No. It was like, pretty cold.
I think the original was good or something.
Wasn't that? There's quite a long time between Civ 3 and Civ 4, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, there's quite a long time between Civ 4 and Civ 5 as well. But it seems like it was there.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
So the other thing is, like, I think maybe, it wasn't when Civ 4 came out. I got the impression that Civ 3 was not as dearly loved as like Civ 2.
No, it's true.
I mean, Civ 4 was properly brilliant.
Yeah, that's
I think if you look at the tech of Civ 4, and it doesn't look that old when I've looked at it, so it doesn't feel like it's aged. So when Civ 5 comes out, it's just about like, really, I've got the game already here.
I think everyone had an amazing experience with Civ 4, and they're having the same experience. And if it was a fresh experience,
yeah.
Then
it's just like Fallout New Vegas. It's a great experience. It's just you know, it's got a half-life.
The stuff they've done to it though is they've definitely made the right decisions at every stage. Changing from hexes to squares and removing the stacks is very, very smart, and it makes the game better, definitely. I have found it quite easy at the most.
Yeah, the AI seems to be the thing. Mm-hmm.
We've got a list of mods that apparently helps you fix that on our website.
Do you think they'll patch the AI?
It's weird. I think
they let a lot of the staff go, didn't they, before they released the game? Like 3 months
or something. Yeah.
Might be maybe more, but yeah. I can't remember.
I think AI is probably so fundamental to everything they do that they. Well, I'm not even going to speculate on that. I don't necessarily. You know that thing where Empire, you know, people finally realise that. They couldn't transport troops over water, and that became a really big deal in the community. Well, the reasons I think that became a really big deal is because we live in a world where everyone is connected, and if someone says something on a forum, someone can spot that and someone can link to it, and it just kind of snowballs very quickly. And so Empire got a very bad reputation very quickly. It's made, not necessarily that instance, but now there is a like the most hardcore fans are obsessive over the game, playing the game properly. And I don't, you know, I'm fairly certain Civ 4's AI didn't play Civ 4 properly. And I'm fairly certain that none of the Total War games ever kind of played that game properly. There are a few developers in the world who can make really good AI, like Stardock, Paradox, maybe. But for a long time, casualer strategy fans haven't really been bothered about AI to that extent. That's starting to change. I was reading recently that the original Civ's AI was just basically dice rolls. It didn't have an AI. It was schizophrenic. And the fun from it came not from fighting other leaders, but from doing the mechanics of playing the game. I think games from that era coming forward now are very, very exposed because they don't have the AI chops that we necessarily think they do have.
It's definitely possible to get pissed off about something and to dislike a game because of something that has never actually negatively affected your experience.
Yes, exactly.
Because you've heard it's true. And like the Deus Ex thing, I mean, it's, I think if they do it well, if they scale difficulty well to experience or whatever, and you know they're the first people to do this perfectly, there'll be a bunch of people who just take other problems they have with the game and make that about the difficulty thing because they find that idea distasteful and they're just pissed off about it. And you can, this is not, you know, criticizing the players necessarily, it's just saying to developers, be very careful about what you let people say about you.
The same thing happened with F1 2010, where people said that it simulates the car in front of you and the car behind you to give you a sense of there being other cars on the track. But as soon as they were out of view, they blipped out of existence and there were just dots on the map and they faked it their times. That turned out not to be true. But even if it was, I mean, like if you play the game and you don't notice, then it's not a problem. And I'm playing the game fine and I'm enjoying it.
But once you're told about that,
you start looking for it, you know, it diminishes the reputation.
It's like an Easter egg.
It's like, you know, when you watch Star Wars and there's that bit where the trooper hits his head on the door. Once you've seen it, you can't not see it every time.
This is the longest answer to a Twitter question.
Yeah. It's also Kieran's thing of mechanic spoilers, which he's written about recently.
Okay. Imperial Creed, Subcom 2 DLC puts jetpacks on boats. Any ideas how this could ever be bettered in future DLC?
Yes, I do actually. They should make it so that you can create a lake on maps that don't have any water, so you can just like make a pool so you can build a naval factory. The problem is like Cybran boats are fucking amazing now. And they can walk on land, they can jetpack over mountains, and they have incredible long-range weapons.
Not really
they can,
boats anymore.
They can deal with absolutely everything that you can throw at them. But you can't build them if there isn't any water. So I'd really like just to be able to build a naval factory, just a little pond, and have boats walk out of
it. I want to play these games at ground level. I want to be a first-person gamer.
Yeah, there is actually... We write about a mod in the next Top 10 Downloads that lets you... reworks a bunch of Supcom's AIs to be even more like the first game, and also adds like a ground level view, so you can just click on something and say, I want to see from this thing's perspective.
Oh, it's wow.
Like FPS Supcom.
That's fantastic.
J-Wheels asks, no he doesn't, Henrip asks, what will PC Blizzard announce at BlizzCon?
World domination.
Yeah.
They're taking over China.
Diablo 3. I was right last time, so.
I'm going to BlizzCon,
not an announcement one, surely.
But it's, you know, the last BlizzCon they announced Cataclysm, the BlizzCon before they showed some StarCraft, new StarCraft stuff and new Diablo stuff. I'm fairly certain it'll just be new Diablo stuff.
Yeah, it's not. No, don't think have a feel of a.
But
a
I'm very
coming
much
up.
Looking forward to it, if only because the dancing competition is one of the most fun things you can do whilst absolutely twat faced.
They've already said that there won't be any Heart of the Swarm there, haven't they?
Yeah. Yes, they said that to us, which is a shame. Us. Bloody love the Zerg. Anyway, Jay Wheels asks, looking for games that de-emphasize combat and favor exploration, i.e. Amnesia but not so scary. Thanks, Podcat. It's going to be Fallout, surely.
Minecraft as well.
Minecraft, yeah.
Yeah.
Minecraft.
Fallout's got a lot of combat in it.
Okay. Stalker? But that's really shooty, isn't it?
Yeah. Dad, just play Minecraft.
Okay. Danjay asks, if ArenaNet HQ was taken out by Zombie Hordes tomorrow and Guild Wars 2 never saw release, what lessons would it leave the industry?
There are zombies out there.
Yeah, lock your doors.
Good question.
What question is getting at?
Duncan27 asks, will you do another PCG live thingy? I'd like to. We should do.
Yeah, we should do something. Meet people.
I think we're in a better place to do it and fill it.
Don't you just ask people to get drunk with you one night?
Oh yeah, we've got to do that. Shit.
And it was all industry people that said yes.
Yeah, I was drunk in a taxi and tweeted from the PC Gamer account, hey, do you want to go out and get drunk? Apparently lots of people do, so we need to arrange that. Sorry.
PC Gamer Live, yeah.
Crawl827 says, what do you guys think of Brink from Splash Damage? I think it will be the next big shooter on PC. I think it's a game with guns in it. We can't say anything bad about Brink because we're quite good friends with Splash Damage, so we have to say nice things about it. Even though their game sucks.
We haven't. Have anyone else played Brink? I don't think we have.
I've played it.
I've played it.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried
about it.
Actually,
I've played Brink. What the hell am I talking about?
You're worried about it.
I forgot I played it.
I am worried about it. In fact, I think I wrote a preview about that in the next issue. Where it just doesn't... I mean, it's a little bit ways away from release, but it doesn't feel that good to shoot at people in it. And they keep talking about how they've learnt the lessons about how complicated enemy territory Quick Wars is and how they've added all these systems to make it easier, and the kind of quick mission things is now a nice radio menu, and that's all true, but it's still fucking complex. Like, really hard to get into, really hard to tell what's going on, hard to read the state of the battle and work out what you should be doing. It's a really fine balancing act, and maybe over the next few months they polish it up and it turns out great, but it also could just be mediocre and not very good, and I'm not convinced.
If it's as good as Section 8, I'll be happy, which is a shooter that's not the best shooter in the world, but it's just a dynamic evolving battlefield that, you know, has clear objectives, and you kind of it's just a fun team game, basically.
Section 8 have just one objective, though, and you do that on different levels.
It's like there's capture points and then there's objectives, and the objectives are kind of randomly generated. So like a APC turns up and you have to defend it, or a commander comes on the battlefield and you have to protect him.
That's the one where you can blast in from space, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Section 8 is awesome. Yeah. I wish more people knew about it and liked it.
I had problems with the characters' heads.
Okay.
The proportions of those heads are weird.
They too small or
power
too
armor.
I can't really remember what it was. It's just like
they are pretty small relative to their shoulders.
They're kind of pointy as well.
Ed's daddy asks, Civ 4 or Civ 5? I'd say Civ 5.
I opened up Civ 5 twice and it crashed both times within 5 minutes. So Civ 4.
Civ 4, damn you.
Jaffo asks, question, is Red Dead Redemption coming to PC soon, badly ported or not?
Probably not now. They've spent so long waiting for it.
Did they say that it was coming to PC, or did we just assume that it was coming to PC?
They've always assumed because that's what they always do.
Working assumption is it will come to PC. There's no reason for it not to come to PC.
I think there is, given how badly, how terribly made their PC games are, and how the sort of bad publicity they keep on getting with them.
Maybe.
You know, I think it's probably
it's
easier
free
for
money.
I don't think it's free money. I think it's probably easier for them to not do it because I mean, Steam were refunding their games last time.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And they almost never refund games.
No. Terrible answer. Mighty Dog asks, "I'm an FPS fan. I have TF2, but it's never really grabbed me. You guys seem to love it. What am I missing?" Hats.
Fun.
you've got to find a nice, fun server and enjoy it as a party.
Play against bots, actually.
Yeah, play as a soldier or the heavy. Yeah. And just get the lay of the land. It's wonderful when you get it.
The heavy is win mode. Like, no one really plays it. I think he's the least popular class now, but he's not. It's not because he's underpowered. Like, if you look at the stats, he's actually the most powerful class. Yeah. And he just does like crazy damage, just crazy kills. And every time I play him, like, I will get a kill per life at least.
Yeah.
I often get two kills. If I don't get two kills, I feel like, oh man, I fucked that life up. And then I think, hang on. Like when I get one kill as a soldier, I'm like, yes.
And
as a sniper, I'm like, yeah, fucking fantastic.
If you get sniped in the heavy, it's the most
exactly
and spied as well.
But it's a movement thing. If you get the new heavy new gloves, adds 30% speed. Is almost as fast as
so
the soldier.
Gloves of running urgently.
Yep.
Grew. Surely they should be roller skates of running urgently. Yeah. Okay. Plays heavy. Benoit Mandelbrot, mathematician and star of Jonathan Coulton's song, passed away recently. What game should I play in his memory? It's quite odd.
Does Love have some interesting fractal stuff going on it?
I have no idea. What was that game? Sorry, Dom. What was the game that you told me to play that was on Steam there?
Oh,
last
the
night?
Polynomial?
Polynomial, which is...
I do like polynomials.
Which is like a shooter, space shooter, where the levels are randomly generated using...
According to your music.
Fractal... Really?
Yeah, what it takes your music from the... You put music into it and it generates it from that.
Cool.
But it does its stuff with fractals, and it's weird, warpy levels and space shooty.
Don't play Fracture.
No, don't play that. That's rubbish. I remember a Asteroids clone, which every time you blew up an asteroid, it would create a kind of crazy fluorescent fractal on the screen, and then gradually your screen would be taken over by fractals.
Yeah, cool.
And I played that when I was about 14. I thought it was the best thing I'd ever seen in my life.
Play Mandel Brothers in Arms.
Hey! Darth Steve asks... No, he doesn't. BJ Rose asks, what happened to Chris Livingston? He was very entertaining, but he's been silent for months.
Yeah, he's he still exists. Still talk to him occasionally. I'm always pestering him to do stuff for us, so it's not, you know, us stopping using him. It's just he's been really busy with work, so he hasn't had a lot of chance to do.
Does he update his site still?
No, his blog, which is awesome, First Person Shouter, hasn't been updated in ages, and I haven't even seen anything on First Person Observer in a long time.
So you think if he takes on too much for one man?
Yeah, he starts a lot of projects. He does like to start projects.
Ed's daddy asks, been playing EHM 2007 for too long now. Is there another hockey management game on the horizon? I think that's probably addressed to the US podcast. Yeah. Believe it. Darth Steve 333 asks, I've just put StarCraft 2, but I'm worried I'll be the world's worst player. Any tips for complete strategy noobs on myself? Just play it.
Yeah, the way I got into it was to watch professional games, and it's pretty confusing at first in terms of like the terms people use. But as you watch it, you just like from how the commentators talk, you understand the significance of things people are doing, and they're so addictive to watch. Like you just keep watching, and you'll learn, you know, how to play basically.
James R87 asks, you need to tell me if this is the PCG UK or US podcast. It is the UK podcast. Thank you for listening.
Can't you tell?
BJ Rose asks, what advice would you give to someone who wants to write for PC Gamer? Use long words.
Use shorter words as well, though, in the intro.
Write words.
Mine would be, like, don't write like you're trying to be important or clever. Yeah. Like, if you actually read PC Gamer, we talk in a pretty conversational style, and every time we get writing from someone new, even if they're very good, it's often very showy and kind of... Yeah, I think you'll find.
read
Tim Stone's,
look
at this clever joke I have.
Read everything Tim Stone writes, but be prepared to admit to yourself you'll never be that good.
Yeah. I think that, I mean,
I guess Graham looks after most of our new freelancers, but Graham and Craig between you. Send them words, listen to what they say.
Don't cry when I send them back saying, yeah, what have you done here?
Craig can be quite brutal.
I've been absolutely brutal to Rich, but you know, it's funny.
And like, just, I think, seriously, the thing about it is, I don't think of PC Gamer as this big journalist bastion thing. I think of us as entertaining, and you know, our job is to find out cool shit and tell you all about it, and you know, break great stories. But we have to be funny and entertaining as we do it. And if you, there's an element of slapstick to some of the stories in PC Gamer where you kind of set ourselves up for the fall. We're quite self-deprecating, relatively silly, and that's, you can't really force that, but you can get better at that by just trying to write like you'd explain it to one of your best friends.
Yeah.
And that's the simplest way forward.
I don't have any best friends.
Well, no, you don't.
See, I'm being self-deprecating.
Mia V asks, why is New Vegas featured in several of my dreams over the past 2 weeks? Am I being brainwashed?
There's a new advertising technology that allows you to inject adverts right into people's dreams.
Is that why I can't keep dreaming about washing powder?
Yes.
Cool. Killfall asks, why does Ravenholm make me cry with frustration every time? I just can never remember where the lever is for moving the crane.
Why does what, sorry?
The lever for moving the crane.
What's he playing?
Ravenholm.
Can't remember the lever. What? That's... I know which lever means. You just like, just when there's the big spinning circular sorbet, just turn right just before then, and then you've got some stairs and the lever's up there.
Just leave this podcast. Yeah, leave this
Thanks,
podcast.
Gamesmaster.
Jacob Gerald asks, what games are you most looking forward to this holiday season?
Holiday season?
It's American.
Yeah.
Only Americans have non-denominational celebrations.
I suppose Fallout New Vegas is the one for us this year. It's out now, but you know, it'll last until then, I think.
I'm actually looking forward to getting some time to have a properly long campaign in Empire.
Oh, also, surely you're more excited about Cataclysm than anything.
Oh, yeah, it's not that. It's an expansion pack that I'm not going to be able to do my fucking campaign in Empire, am I? Because I've got Cataclysm going, shit!
Stop making games.
Stenpet asks, that's a good question. What defines a great strategy game? Start debate.
Great strategy game. I've been thinking about this lately. Well, I've been thinking about what defines just a strategy game in general, and I've decided I'm going to make like an abstract strategy game where you just have like a big blob that's just called economy and a blob that's called army, and you get to decide which one you want to increase. And as you increase your economy, you can like increase your army more, and then like your economy, it just has a gun on it. That's like, the only other mechanic in RTS is just that there's a certain amount, like the only reason you don't just walk all your guys into the enemy base straight away is that there's like a defensive advantage. A defensive advantage is usually just like you can build turrets cheaper than you can build army or whatever. But basically you can just simulate it by just having a big weapon on your economy. And then you could, like, once you've made that and it's that simple, you could just tweak those sliders and just see what the most fun balance is. Like, this came from watching End of StarCraft and just thinking about, you know, why can't he just attack now? Or, you know, what's actually happening here? And really, it's just make a big army or make a big economy and then make an even bigger army.
So, is that what makes him good?
It's
kind of.
It's on. I think it's about unparalleled decisions where, you know, if you're given a certain amount of numbers to start with and then you just keep increasing them and you increase them at the same rate, then, you know, when those two armies clash, it's a stalemate. So you've got to kind of put these branches in the path you take that are, some are better and some are worse at certain things.
Yeah.
And that kind of, that clear definition of what will work in every situation and making you understand it and then applying it.
It's funny though, like the thing I enjoy is, I like strategy like in a kind of general sense, like I'm going to take that massive extractor now and that'll be useful to get it early and that kind of stuff, and that's all really cool. But in terms of like the typical thing that's sort of thought of as being the strategy in RTSs, which is making counters, like finding out using scouting tactics to find out what your enemy's building, then intelligently deciding what your counter should be, I don't enjoy that at all. And that's why I like Supreme Commander better than StarCraft, is because StarCraft, I have to know what my enemy's building and have to know what the counter is, and it takes a lot of work to learn that. Subcom 2, I just know I can build megaliths with adapters. Those two units, I just spam those forever. and they're anti-air, they've got shielding.
That says to me that's not a very good strategy game.
I know, but it just makes me enjoy it so much more. I'm just going to build that. I know that that's going to work against no matter what they throw at me.
But if you have to find out what they're doing in StarCraft, don't you just send like one dude out?
They can wall off early on. Or the worst is like everyone scouts really early in multiplayer, in professional games. And I can do that, and I can send a drone to the enemy base, and I can find out where the enemy base is. When I get there, I'm like, oh, he's got a base, and he's mining some minerals. Well, that's enlightening, isn't it?
Base building is a wise strategy. Games are great.
Yeah.
I'm not that fussed about all the war that's going on around me. It's kind of just gnawing in my way. I like building very neat rows of buildings.
This is true, actually. While I'm building my megaliths and adapters, Graham's just sitting there building energy generators in this perfect grid. Attacking Noah.
It's all about the mass conversion.
Yeah. Humming to yourself.
Yep, pretty much.
I've started to learn loads about kind of your mindset over the last kind of 6 months, Graham. And it's basically just about building everything. Like, everything you've really enjoyed is just about building shit. It's Worm, Minecraft, Supreme Commander base building, Dwarf Fortress.
Pretty much, yeah. Resource gathering and then building stuff with those resources.
Have you played much Rollercoaster Tycoon recently?
No, I never actually got into Rollercoaster Tycoon. I used to be a big fan of theme parks.
Can you just
SimCity
do our garden?
Our garden does need done.
Yes. if I said it as a challenge, sorry.
Can we get John to get rid of that sofa?
You've got a sofa in your garden?
No, yes. I got it on the patio. Right.
Josh GT asks, is PC Gamer going to have a Black Ops ranked server?
No, because you have to get them specifically from
game rankings
or whatever. Yeah,
game something, game rankings, game servers. Yeah. .net.
So when we had Modern Warfare server last time and we went in, we all hated it.
Yeah, we had a bad time.
A nightmare. That was the least pleasant game experience I've ever had.
I had lots of fun games in Modern Warfare 2, not on our server because. Yeah. Well, I always just hit the random connect. I don't really care about dedicated servers at times.
Give us a ranking, a dedicated server, then we'll definitely brand it as and say it's the official PC Gamer server, but we're not going to knock ourselves out to get one.
No.
Nersh tweet asks, whatever happened to Ross Atherton? Has he fallen off the earth? Yes, there is actually just one place in the world where gravity doesn't exist, and if you step on it, you'll just fall off. Unfortunately, that's what happened to Ross.
He was drunk one night.
He was drunk, and he stepped on the...
He read a sign that said, don't step on here.
Normally,
he said,
you wouldn't know not to step there.
Yeah.
No one will tell me where to step, he said. And then he was off.
He's just kind of just passing Neptune. Atman1983 asks, question for the podcast, which you prefer, Civ 5 or Empire Total War? To me, Civ 5 lasting any real strategy was too easy. Number one, turn the difficulty up. Like, seriously, don't play it on normal. Two, Empire's really hard though.
Like, turn the difficulty down.
I do want to complete a campaign in Empire. That's one of my kind of gaming ambitions. But it's like, you've got to fucking look after Britain and America and India and South America and like the west coast of Africa. That's a lot of work.
That's why I don't want to play those games. If I have to start polishing my knife in TF2, I'm out.
Yeah. But it's like, at that stage, you'd have a staff for doing that? What?
Yeah, you would, wouldn't you?
That's my secretary now. Speaking of strategy game AI, there's a competition running for a long time to make a bot that can play StarCraft 1 multiplayer, and like the most efficient one, and they just make them fight each other. Basically have a little pro league tournament, but for AIs. And it's just finished, and the winners have been announced. And do you know what the best StarCraft strategy is? It's one that copies the enemy strategy, but steals their gas. So I know exactly what you do, but I've got your gas.
Awesome.
A jerk maneuver.
Antman1983 asks, question for podcast. Now that consoles are boasting 3D tech, do you think this will spur Nvidia to push harder with their PC tech?
They're spurring pretty hard. The problem with that is that
you've got to get a never, monitor, haven't you?
Well, yeah, you've got to get the monitor, you've got to get glasses. It'll never become ubiquitous because ATI aren't doing it. Mm. They're doing just bigger and more.
Yeah.
It's great seeing them both. But 3D probably become pretty important for movies if you use your PC to watch stuff.
Yeah, I guess most people don't use their PC to watch movies currently, but
I do. I mean, I don't think everyone in our house watches stuff on their PC, so, but we're all living in bedrooms, so...
House,
no actual living room.
I have a TV downstairs in a lounge. I just never watch it because it just shows TV. I want it to show my huge library of films and stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe when you get like a streaming box or something.
Yeah, I could probably set up a better solution, but
it takes time.
Also, I can watch stuff in bed.
Isn't your PC monitor technically a TV?
My PC monitor is identical to my TV, yes.
What's your PC monitor?
It's 32 inches.
How big are the icons?
Quite big, yeah. Because it's not even high res. It's like, it's 1300 by 768-ish. And
so I bet it's like butter smooth if you're playing a game.
Yeah, it makes games run beautifully. And the weird thing is, like, once you get to a certain amount of size, it's so impressive you can't see the pixels. It's like,
yeah,
it's so awesome.
I've got a 28-inch monitor, and it's a bad monitor, but it's so big it doesn't matter.
See, my monitor goes up to like 1900 by 1200, but I have to turn down the graphics on. Like, I've even got to turn down the graphics on WoW now because they've upgraded it.
Native res is a real bitch, actually.
Yeah. Maybe I should get like a bigger monitor, but a lower resolution.
Yeah, go for that.
I recommend getting a TV.
Yeah.
It's also crazy bright because it's meant to be viewed from like 10 foot away. I have to put it on like minimum brightness and as far back on my desk as it will go.
Just bathing yourself.
Looking at it sideways. Yeah.
Okay, I think that's it for
yeah. Let's
questions.
Not have any more because we keep on going.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you for that, guys. You don't suck. We were going to record a second podcast, but we've been doing this for an hour and a half, so I'm kind of tired now. We could do another one. Do you want to do another one?
Yeah, all right, let's do another one. In this podcast when we were doing another one about a certain subject. So.
Okay, fine. All right. Well, we're going to pause here, and then in a week's time, you can have another podcast. All right. Thank you.
Possibly 2 weeks.
Possibly 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.